Welcome to the Woadsman Podcast, catching up with all things bushcraft, wild camping, and the great outdoors.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, bro.
Hazy Jane.
Hazy Jane.
Brewdog, really nice.
Under the stars.
Literally pine forest. Pine wood burning. What have we got behind us, Tom?
We've got two lavus.
Yep, Polish lavus.
Polish lavus set up. And a nice pine wood fire in front, giving us lovely incense from the resin that's burning.
Yeah, oh, it's so, so nice. That fat wood that you foraged as well, from that really nice fallen, probably Scots pine.
Yep,
really, Scots really pine. Nice.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area. So me and Liam, we haven't actually been out in a while. It seems like probably to you guys that we're out every week, but actually we record a couple of things at a time and then release them to you guys. So actually we haven't been on a trip for about a month together.
No, it's been a fair while.
So it's really nice to get out with you again, dude.
And you also. We've both been respectively busy.
We certainly have.
It's been really busy. But I guess before we go into what we've been up to, we've got a few messages as well, haven't we?
From our
listeners, which is, you know, always so amazing to hear.
We've had so many. Like, probably if we're not reading out your message, it's nothing personal. Like, it's just that we've had so many lovely messages.
And it gets really hard to, like, manage between what we've replied to, where we're at, who we've got messages from.
If we're not reading your message, it's not because, like, we didn't like it. We love every message we received. It's just probably that it's got buried under a million other messages that are pinged into the inbox. So, apologies if your message doesn't get read out. We are still working out. We're sharing the Instagram, so one of us will reply to someone, and then
we've tried to kind of put a little handle at the end to show who's replying as well. So, because it's not always both of us online, is it?
No, absolutely. So yeah, it's been really nice to hear from the community. It's been really nice to see people getting into our little podcast.
Yeah, so good to get the Woadsman movement going, and we've got some really good kind of listeners like yourselves, obviously, some really just good feedback coming from, and that's where all these little messages really come into their own, just hearing little stories from you guys. Some of you are across the ocean, some of you are down under, some of you are here in our homeland, the UK.
It is absolutely brilliant. And I think we'll start with someone we've read out before, Des Catties.
Brilliant
guy.
Another great YouTuber as well.
And he's a consistent listener and someone who's written into us a number of times.
Yeah, really good supporter of the movement as well and the channel.
So he's written in and he said, "Oi, oi, fellas, enjoyed the latest episode on beer, biltong and natural shelters. Firstly, good shout with a steak detective. Love is me. Ooh, missus." So shelters, good stuff. And staying humble, always learning. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, we're always learning. Today we did a bit of flint napping. For me, that's something I'm not particularly great at.
That's always humbling.
And yeah, it is humbling, doing something that you find hard. So it was great to get out and practice that. So yeah, absolutely. Staying humble and always focus on learning. So he goes on to say, he's made many natural shelters and slept in them for days. I won't send pictures, so just believe me. Though I think people often forget that their first means of shelter protection is what you're standing up in. There are recorded cases of people found dead sitting next to a ruckie full of gear. As you guys experienced, building a shelter from scratch takes work and uses a lot of calories. Also, being in an ideal location as well as having suitable materials can obviously be a hurdle. And that's something we talked about on our episode about natural shelters. And actually, yes, they are calorific. The expenditure that you have
huge
to put in to make a natural shelter is massive. And
it is.
Actually, bring a tarp.
Yeah, 100%. If you're just going out to enjoy a few days, a tarp's a very, very valuable bit of kit. It's something that shelter building definitely makes you respect, doesn't it?
100%. And he makes a really good point about the first layer of defence being the clothes you're standing up in, and your layers in your pack. For example, I'm currently in a waterproof Deer Hunter soft shell.
Yep.
And then I've got a Swan Dry over the top that's actually got a waterproof membrane in as well.
Yeah, so you're well protected.
I'm well protected. And actually, my ground sheet at the moment it doubles up as a layer of clothing. Yeah, so it's a poncho.
Likewise.
So that would be a brilliant layer, because it would A, be something I could wear, but if in a pinch I could actually set it up as a little mini tarp.
Yeah.
So yeah, really good point there, Des. Thank you so much for that. You go on to say, the term forest coma springs to mind when the situation turns serious, and rather than stopping and making a brew and just having a breather to slow down and reassess, can go totally overlooked. Anyways, yeah. Great stuff as usual. Please make the podcasts longer. well, I'm glad we're not boring you at least.
Yeah, no, that's always a good sign when people are telling you to go on for longer, isn't it? I love that. That really is really good. It's a good point as well at the end there, hydration, and it's something we briefly touched on that, you know, after just when our ridgepole snapped, or my ridgepole snapped, and then it tore down our shelter after completion. At first, we kind of just laughed about it for the first few minutes, and then had a drink, and then kind of cracked on. And that hydration really does allow you to reassess things. I've failed multiple times and then had a little drink. I heard Ray Mir saying the exact same thing at the Bushcraft show. You know, sometimes all you need is just take five and have a bit of water.
It's the same thing in like emergency planning when you're lost, is to stop and have a break and just sit down and relax and try and de-stress. And actually, I've just got back from a week in the woods with the Frontier team, and we had a brilliant first aid course for 3 days with real first aid.
Awesome.
So, amazing guy called Adam delivered that for us, and he actually emphasize the importance of the first thing to do in any situation, first aid wise, is to put your gloves on.
Yeah.
Glove up. He said, no glove, no love.
Yeah, you don't want to spread any infection, cross-contaminate anything.
Yeah, so that's the practical sense. So no glove, no love. But actually, the act of slowing down, finding your gloves in your bag, putting your gloves on, gives you time to think.
Yeah, of course.
And it gives you that pause to calm down.
I love that.
So it's the same thing that Des is saying here. It's giving yourself time to think and reassess and calm down, and then move on from there.
Give yourself that little space in the routine to just have a few minutes to yourself.
Yeah,
that's, I like
it.
That.
And like, obviously, if someone's like, it's important, it's cut like their hands, like you can tell them to put pressure on it or whatever while you're putting your gloves on.
Yeah.
But it just gives you that little thing. Okay, I'm going to put my gloves on now. I'm in talking aloud. What am I going to do? How am I going to deal with this thing?
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's just a good thing. Whether you're lost doing first aid, building a shelter, whether you're stranded somewhere, just giving yourself a moment to pause. If you've got time to make a brew, have a brew, have a drink. And reassess from there, and things probably won't look so bad once you've had a little drink and a little chill.
Yeah, definitely. Going on from that, it's kind of like saying, you know, I was on a mountain up at Balfell, up in the Lake District, and we were just meant to be doing a circuit route, and the fog came in really, really heavy, and we ended up kind of taking a wrong turn, and just on a really easy, as the path split, on a really fine detail, and if I hadn't have been kind of so vigilant of checking my map and checking my bearings and checking the landscape around me and what I should be expecting to see, and which was completely wrong on the contours, but if I hadn't have done the same thing, been a bit regimented, I could have easily got a bit complacent and ended up a few extra hundred yards up a mountain than I'd needed to be.
So easily done, and just having a little pause can really be beneficial.
Yeah, definitely. So going on from Des Catty's awesome message, and again, thank you so much for that, mate, we move on to Braden Tobin, and I hope I pronounced that name correct. He starts off by saying, been listening to your podcast, absolutely love it. It's great to listen to on the long road trips around the Pacific Northwest doing hikes and photography trips. And I just think that's absolutely awesome, isn't it, Tom?
So cool.
I mean, to know that that's getting all the way out there.
There's brilliant. Some proper woods out there.
Yeah, there really is. Really, really nice. He then goes on to say he's been doing bushcraft for a while now, mostly survival situation orientated. Grew up in Alaska and spent many nights in shelters and snow caves with friends and my dad, which, you know, that's absolutely amazing to have that opportunity as a young kid, snow caves, you know. We rarely get snow deep enough to build snowmen.
No, I was surprised when it snowed a little bit last week, and I was like, woohoo, snow!
I know, it sounds like we're down under, but it's, you know, my dad remembers really deep snow, and it's not in our lifetime now, is it?
Not really, no.
Yeah, crazy. He then goes on to say, in episode 3, you talked about sharing stories. It's a simple story, but I think it's really pure for what it is. We were doing a bushcraft class in winter in Alaska, and we were doing heated shelters that require a central fire in the middle with circling tarps to sleep in, creates an internal convection oven 21 to 37 degrees.
Whew.
I know, that's pretty toasty, isn't it? It's really good. I was on fire watch from 0200 to 0300. A few snow flurries and flickering light illuminated the surrounding trees, backed by a deep darkness. A pack of wolves ran out and began howling on the frozen lake we were set up next to. It was one of the most real and movie-like bushcraft experiences, as I watched them watched them over my sleeping friends.
So cool.
That is just... Could you imagine that?
The jealousy inside me is real.
You could probably just hear as I started slowing down reading that. It's just, that is the dream. He then goes on to say he works the last 3 years as a prehistoric Native American archaeologist, in Yellowstone National Park in the western US. So my New Year's resolution, or bushalution, which is a little late, but we'll forgive you, Braden, is to learn more Native American methods of craft and survival as they did it for thousands of years, collecting foods in harsh environments, creating stone tools and mobile camp and shelter systems.
That is just the most awesome thing ever.
Yeah. He finishes off by saying cheers and keep up the great podcasts, and just, yeah, like Tom said, what a great bush illusion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously someone with a lot of experience and a lot of dirt time.
Yeah.
And really humbled by the fact that you're getting something and enjoying our podcast, like just two little guys from Britain just doing our thing. But yeah, no, it's like, I think wherever you come from, it's the same draw, isn't it? It's about being outside, it's about those experiences, those stories. And the fact that actually we could, if we were around a campfire with you right now, Braden, I'm sure we'd get on really well.
Yeah.
Like, just because, like, we're probably all the same sort of people. We have the same interests, the same passion for being outside. And I think that just transcends locality, doesn't it, really?
Absolutely. And I think that kind of goes back to how great community is, especially within the bushcraft world. And it's great to see that being reflected in the Woadsman. It really seems like the people that are replying to us really are the kind of the salt of the earth as well, which is
definitely,
you know, just like yourself.
So that brings us on to message number three. So we have a few more messages, and I think we'll probably cap it at three for today.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got quite a lot, and we've got another few episodes that we can get them into as well coming up.
That's it. And they've been really nice and detailed, these messages, so we'll cap it at three. And the third one comes from Ben Rains. Hi guys, writing in again. Another great episode of the podcast, really interesting. Hope you both enjoyed your caveman style steaks with the steak detective sauce. Certainly did, absolutely delicious. Mm-hmm. Steak detective sauce.
Always really, really good.
I was writing to share my little camp setup I have made with my 9-year-old son in a remote part of vast coniferous woodland in the north of England. This is our first ever shelter and bushcraft build. We haven't got it to a state of being watertight, and the woodland will have made it is short of natural leaf litter, moss, or an abundance of fern. So there are some small gaps. I've spent a few nights in it, but always have a tarp at hand just in case the rain decides to come down.
Good idea.
Yeah, really sensible.
We've even like got one, now for just in case the lavoos start to leak. And we spoke earlier about that, didn't we?
Yeah. We haven't waterproofed our lavoos for years, so we have no idea whether they're waterproof. So
yeah,
we brought a tarp. So if one of us springs a leak in the night, we're not going to be unhappy.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think always sensible to plan ahead.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely a good plan. My son hammocked next to me between some nice big pines. I would love to know what you think, although not to your building levels, it is great for what we need. And then Ben sent in some lovely photos of their camp and their shelter.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. It's really, really nice. And I see what you mean about the gaps, but of course, when you haven't got loads of leaf litter around you, that can be an issue, can't it?
Yeah.
Smaller sticks sometimes can be used to fill in those gaps, and sometimes, as long as you've got a strong structure, more timber on top of there.
That's it. More small sticks, and then you can get like moss.
Yep.
Even cutting small turfs.
Yeah,
and work.
And once you've got those bigger gaps filled, even albeit with, let's say, moss or the smaller sticks, you can then pine needles over as well. So
just whatever you can find, but it looks brilliant. I think and what an amazing memory your little 9-year-old is going to have of that.
So amazing.
Just a brilliant thing to be doing, and a really nice shelter. So props to Ben and his 9-year-old son.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Ben.
Absolutely, and I think we'll leave it there for messages, but do keep writing in. Some will get read on the podcast, as many as we possibly can fit in.
Yeah, and other ones we might just share as a little story on the Woadsman Instagram as well. We can share some of the nice stories
absolutely
on there.
And it does go noticed, and it is really appreciated by both of us. We read all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes we're just, you know, extremely busy with our other channels, with our careers, with our other lives,
yeah.
You know, exactly. So it does get quite full on, but we thank every one of you for your support as well.
Absolutely, and that brings us on. So we've both been quite busy.
Yeah.
So Liam, you were at a pretty awesome camp, and I've been lucky enough to see some of the footage of this before it goes to video, but where were you this week?
I was at Camp Ramuda, which is straight out of Amarillo, Texas. It's a country ranch, but it's actually here in the UK, down in Kent, and it's just a location, really lovely location, that I'm really privileged to have been invited to by Alex from Community Camps on Instagram, and he's a chap who I met at the East Anglian Bushcraft Community Camp. So Craig from East Anglian Bushcraft, a really amazing chap, decided to kind of conceptualize this idea of getting some of his followers and subscribers out on a little community camp for the kind of mental well-being, and to celebrate his charity walk, which was for veterans and mental health with veterans.
So important.
Yeah, really, really important. So Alex, who I met there, invited me, Craig, a few others, Ben, Bellows Ben, Delboy Stanton, over to this camp. Alex F&A was there, really awesome Australian chap, featured in my video. And we just had an amazing time. It was just amazing. There was wild horses around, you know, big longhorn skulls on the wall, wagon wheels, a ramuda, which is actually the stacked wooden kind of covered area outside.
Right, okay.
So that's what it's named after. And yeah, it was just a really awe-inspiring place.
The photos I've seen make it look so cool. And I'm someone, I used to watch Westerns with my granddad, and my
likewise.
Favourite genre of movie is Western. Yeah. So my favourite films are the spaghetti Westerns with
good
Clint
man.
Eastwood and like True Grit and
yeah,
all of that sort
perfect.
Of thing. So I absolutely love cowboy stuff.
Good
and
man.
Like I saw where you were and I was like, oh my God!
I think even my dad was jealous because he was, who is bred and, you know, who is born and reared on... you know, John Wayne and the likes, Raw
you
Hired.
Said your dad was bred on a farm.
Well, he was, in fact, you know, grew up in rural Ireland. But no, he absolutely loves Westerns. So, yeah, it was really good. I do too as well. So, such an awesome experience. And yourself, you've also been busy, haven't you? You've been undertaking loads recently.
Yeah. So I've done a couple of solo trips, so some day trips. I've been out with my girlfriend. We did an overnighter, our first ever overnighter together in a tarp. We've done camps before together, but it's the first time Emma has actually been out under a tarp. So
a proper wild camp for her.
Yeah, she really enjoyed it. I was worried in case she wouldn't enjoy the openness of the tarp, but actually she smashed it and really enjoyed it and liked being able to see the woods.
That's
so
amazing.
That was really good. And we did that at Badgell's because I was down there checking out the course area for when I do my carving in the summer.
Which is really exciting.
Which is very exciting.
That's
so yeah,
another thing you've been extremely busy with planning.
Yeah, so I've been planning that and I've been doing all the sort of curriculum and lesson plans and risk assessments for that. So if you are interested in learning some carving, I'm not going to plug it too hard, but yeah,
no, plug it.
The bookings are live on Badgell's Wood website. So.
Yeah, if you don't plug it, I'm going to plug it. That's
so
it.
Do check it out because they are now live, so you can book on to learn some carving or some cookery with me in the summer.
And Tom is an amazing carver. If you haven't seen Tom's work, if you're just new listening to us as the Woadsman podcast, please do go check out Back Garden Bushcraft, his Instagram, and respectively Campfire Carvings. He produces some really, really beautiful pieces available on Etsy.
Oh, thanks, mate.
No, honestly, they deserve to be on there. They're really, really nice. I've got a few pieces in my collection that I treasure. Just really, really nice. And it's really good to see you sharing those skills. And, you know, I can't wait to come along to a course. And
yeah, it's going to be great fun.
Respectively, see you at the community camp, which is happening later this year.
Yeah.
Which you'll be hopefully doing a few little kind of demonstrations.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I'd love to.
Yeah, hopefully that goes out.
Absolutely. And then, yeah, so done, took Emma out. We did a day trip. We did that overnighter. And yeah, it was really nice to spend some time outdoors doing bushcraft with her. She's a great laugh, and she gets stuck in, and she actually wanted to learn how to put the tarp up. So that's she inspiring. Now knows the tarp knots. She's
brilliant.
Yeah, she got stuck in with all the cooking, and I reckon next time we'll get her doing the fire lighting.
Nice. Yeah,
and I can just sit and watch.
That'd be an achievement. Yeah. Catered for.
Yeah, so that was really fun, and was really good for our mental health as well, just to be outside. And she's been working really hard, so it was a bit of a reward for her to get out and just have a laugh for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Very needed, well deserved rest. And then, yeah, I went out for a solo camp. Now, I've done loads and loads of solo camps before. I don't worry about being in the woods by myself. What I've never actually done is a solo stealth wild camp.
Yeah, awesome.
So somewhere where I'm not necessarily got permission, and I just sort of go in there, leave early. And I decided that actually I wanted to do that. So I did that recently as well. Normally I
that
solo
really
wild camp
as well.
It was really good. It was terrible weather.
But the first night was awful, wasn't it?
But yeah, I was rewarded with the sun out the next day. So, so that was good. And I won't go on too long about this. But then last week I was out for seven days. I can't really remember now.
But this was just... I'd like it if you went on a little bit, because it was... sounded like such an awesome experience, to be honest.
It was.
You covered so many different things, and I'll let you carry on.
It really was. So... I volunteered for Paul Kirtley and Frontier Bushcraft a couple of years ago, and now I'm one of their assistants.
Yeah.
So the course season's about to start. So we actually had a team event, a team training week, where the Frontier team will get together and share skills, and we have some external instructors come in to aid in teaching us skills. And
yeah,
one of the things we need, obviously, if we're teaching clients and helping clients with tools, we need to be pretty hot on our first aid.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we had a real first aid in, fantastic company. Do check them out if you're interested in remote first aid. Adam delivered the best first aid course I've ever been on, and I've been
really?
On a couple.
Nice.
Really funny guy, but made the content interesting, approachable, and easy to understand.
No, that's really important. With a subject like that, it can get quite daunting, can't it?
Absolutely. And he put it in practical scenarios. So we actually, some of us would become the casualty and would use stage blood to really make it come alive and give us a bit of pressure, really. We he'd make the scenarios interesting enough to make it as real as it could possibly be in a simulated environment, to really give us that practice of, okay, how do we go through our response to this situation?
Yeah.
And he gave us some really handy sort of keys to remember sort of our routine in a first aid scenario.
Because that's the important thing. It's like, you know, it's all well and good learning the thing, just being able to remember it when you're under pressure. And,
that's it.
Like you said, I think you mentioned to me earlier about simulated kind of pressure situations.
Yeah.
So it really sounded like it drove that into you.
I mean, a simulated pressure situation for me was when everyone else picked all the other casualties and I was left with Paul Kirtley, who is obviously like one of my idols and like people I really respect and look up to. And like, I really didn't know how to deal with the injury that he was simulated to have.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I was just stressing out. I was like, I really don't want to mess this up.
No, I'm proud of you for managing to get through that, buddy.
But yeah, no, it was good. And Paul was really good. He gave me some feedback, and he said the things I did well, and also if I missed anything. So I think I forgot to check capillary refill.
Okay.
And I also tried to roll him over when actually he was already in the recovery position.
Right.
So I didn't need to. So yeah. I learned from that scenario. I learned, okay, always check for capillary refill, and also if they're in the recovery position, don't move them.
Yeah, that goes back to learning through mistakes, doesn't it?
That does, and that was part of it. It was
exactly.
We hadn't actually been shown how to deal with a casualty on our front at that point. It was deliberately designed to cause us to be like, okay,
think
how do
feet.
We deal with this?
Yeah.
And
it's
actually,
a 50-50 at that moment, isn't it?
It is, and it's just down to your how do you deal with the pressure, I guess. And the thing is, he gave us some fantastic little clues, and one key thing that Adam drilled into us was that actually injuries don't tell us the severity of the situation.
No.
The vital signs do.
Yeah.
So it's always about checking the vital signs of the casualty.
Like response, etc.
Because someone could be bleeding profusely, but still be fully alert, breathing fine, good capillary refill, yeah. And all they need is a bit of pressure on that wound.
Get it closed
and
up.
Their temperature could be fine, or their colour could be fine, and yet you could have someone with no blood who's slumped in a corner,
yeah,
not
really
alert,
struggling.
Not breathing properly, and they are, in that case, a more serious casualty.
Yeah.
And so it was really interesting, and he had this idea of big sick, little sick.
I like
and
that.
If the vitals were not normal, it's bad.
Bad, yeah.
So if the vitals are normal, good, little sick. If
nice.
The vitals aren't normal, bad, big sick.
Cool, I remember that.
And it's a really good way of actually working it out.
It's a good way of communicating the severity in a very efficient way.
Yeah, and it was such a detailed course. We went into so much. We had a dentist there, and we did dentistry, dentistry, obviously, like a little temporary filling, and how to, like, what happens if someone knocks a tooth out in the woods, what do you do in that situation.
Sounds really comprehensive.
Really comprehensive. We even had an anaesthetist giving us, like, tips and tricks on that sort of thing, and just going over what they do on a daily basis. And
it's all stuff you need to know, especially... get further training in that, you know, that region. You want to at least be able to have an understanding of how these things work.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
If you had to work alongside with paramedics on the mountain or something like that.
Understand it is really important. So yeah, so that was fantastic. And that was three days, and then we did another half day where Paul talked about how they have their first aid kits. We went through all of the like our first aid kits that we would carry. We started getting together little personal cuts kits and things.
Yeah. Which is something we're passionate about, isn't it? We both got a first aid kit. You made a point of showing me exactly where yours is.
We always do. I'm always like, right, Liam, my first aid kit is in the left front pouch on my pack.
Yeah, and mine's always in the same place on mine every trip.
And that way, if I go and put an axe in my leg,
yep.
and I need a tourniquet, then Liam knows where it is.
Exactly, and likewise for Tom.
And I think it's just thinking about that stuff and not being blasé about, oh, it couldn't happen to us, because an accident's called an accident for a reason.
Exactly, yeah.
So yeah, the first aid was brilliant. I know I've gone on about that for ages, so a massive thank you to the Frontier team for putting that on.
I was about to say,
Real First Aid. I learnt so much, and there's so much. I filled an entire notebook up with notes, and he gave us more reading and articles to go away and read, so I've got loads and loads of reading to do when I get home.
Brilliant. Definitely go check out Frontier guys, Frontier Bushcraft. They run some really amazing courses. I know that's where Tom got a lot of went to a few courses and got some education.
Now
like he says, he's working alongside Paul, which is absolutely amazing, with Paul
so
being
I'm just
such
an
a
assistant
high figure.
so it's really nice to work alongside someone that's so respected and so knowledgeable, and just seeing how they deal with things and how they act outside is, you just learn by diffusion, just by watching and it is fantastic. I'm really, really privileged and grateful for the opportunity to work there. So then after the first aid, we actually did tracking, something I've never done before. And I was in Paul's group, and he was just showing us a few tips and tricks, giving us the sort of military sort of protocols for man tracking, and then you can use that obviously for animal tracking as well.
Yeah, of course.
But then what we did is we did scenarios where we would track the other team through the woods, and that was really fun. It was like, at one point we were like hiding behind a stump of a tree, and the other team walked past us because they'd missed our footprints.
That's amazing.
And we were all just like, this is like something in The Revenant, you know?
Yeah, that's really exhilarating kind of moments, aren't they? That's amazing. I bet you felt kind of like you'd won that scenario at that point.
Yeah,
you definitely beat the other team.
And the thing is, it wasn't even like a competition.
No,
it just,
of course.
It was. We were actually trying to help each other out, but it was just one of those really cool moments.
Well, it's nice putting them in a position that then shows them an opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
Or shows you an opportunity to learn.
Well, they then doubled back and found us.
Yeah.
And it was like we actually lost their trail later on because we got to a footpath that had been really well trodden. And we were like, there are so many footprints here. There are deer trails, there's deer scat. There's about 5 or 6 different pairs of footprints going in different ways.
Yeah,
which one is our quarry? And in the end, we had to, Paul showed us how to sort of cast out, and we sort of set a little area around and we sort of paced out and tried to find out where they'd left the track.
Yeah, really handy technique.
And yeah, it was really interesting. It's something I've never done before and something I really want to learn more of. Yeah, hopefully in future I'll get a chance to learn more from them because they know their stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've done a little bit of tracking in my time, but that's mainly, you know, animals like quarry, so mainly deer in my local area. I've spent a lot of my time in this woodland tracking smaller muntjac, so I've got some kind of experience in that, but man tracking is a totally different thing. And it's always good to kind of you know, when you see, I saw a post about Ray Mears even said it, that he learned man tracking by following joggers. So he'd watch a jogger and then he'd like watch them run off and then he'd try and follow them.
Yeah, you can get in trouble for
yeah.
that.
No.
It's something that we can play around actually, because you quickly forget where your footprints were.
Yes.
So even pacing around in a circle is like still quite good practice, trying to find exactly where you put your feet.
Exactly where you put them, yeah, 100%. Small little disturbances are always the key.
Yeah, it's getting your eye in. And it's like, yeah, I just learned so much. And it was amazing to see Paul and James and Henry and Matt and all of the Frontier team just getting together and having a good time, but also like sharing skills. It was really good.
That's what it's all about. And it's so nice that Paul's sharing those, you know, really valuable skills with you and, you know, all the other people as well, his students as well.
There
really
was
building a bushcraft
16
legacy.
Of us in the, at one point. There
That's
was 16
great.
Of us in the woods together.
Proper family.
And it was really, really cool. And yeah, I'm back out with them again this Friday. So it's currently, what day of the week is it today? Liam, I completely lost track. Monday. It's Monday today. I'm back in the woods with them on Friday for another 3-day course.
Yep.
And that's the
that's
first
gonna be amazing.
The first one of the clients arriving for me this year.
Brilliant.
So that'll be good.
Yeah, I'm doing a solo camp this weekend, which will be really good. Hopefully doing a little camp with Ellie as well next week.
Nice, man.
So that should be really, really nice. And yeah, I mean, this week I'm probably going to do something for a movement which I've been trying to work on lately. I know you've been helping with that as well, which is great. And I saw your submissions. And it's actually called Forage for Freedom. And it's something that me and Tom... it's about something that me and Tom are quite passionate about. Tom especially has been very proactive in speaking about this topic on his channel. And it's something that really drew me to that aspect and to him just knowing about his openness about it, and a kind of a kindred spirit I could already feel. and that's men's mental health. Mm. Not just men's mental health in general. Mm. And it's, you know, about taking your mind off of the norm, taking your mind off of the things that are stressing you, and just using that time to go out and find something, be it a spot, be it a plant, be it an insect or a bird, even a natural resource, or just peace in your mind. It's all about that. And I think really the idea of the movement was just invigorate the discussion about breaking down that kind of taboo.
Yeah, it's really sad that there is still this sort of idea that people don't feel comfortable talking about things they're going through. And I think especially in this space, we've got a real community and people that look out for each other. And I think the more we break down that wall, the fewer barriers there are for people if they are having a hard time.
Yeah,
it will mean more people have friends they can turn to and be like, you know what, Liam, I'm really struggling at the moment.
Yeah, I think sometimes the only way of dealing with something is being publicly accepting it, or, you know, openly accepting it. Doesn't have to be publicly, but you know, being open about things, talking about it, like how yours and my relationship is.
Yeah, and it always has been. Even when we were just sort of starting out, getting becoming friends. We've always had quite real conversations, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what we're quite privileged with, that we've always been quite open and honest with each other. And, you know, I was nervous meeting you. And, you know,
and I was as well.
Yeah, you know, I was like, oh, like, this is a really awesome dude who I've watched his videos. He really knows his stuff. And, you know, nerves get the better of me. They do. I get anxious. I'm not scared to admit that. And
I get nervous before every one of my courses at Frontier.
Yep.
I'm so worried about doing the best I can and not letting anybody down. And
of course,
you know,
yeah.
And it's and if I let my brain decide, I'd never do any of this stuff.
No, I know.
And sometimes I'm just like, Liam. I'm having a bit of a rough day. I'm sort of second guessing myself. I don't know if I can do this. Liam will just be like, don't be silly, mate. You'll be all right. You're really good at this. You know your stuff. You're, you know, and he just picks me up. And it's been really helpful, actually, to have someone who's been like, you know what, it's 3 days. You'll be absolutely fine.
And, yeah. And it's that kind of moral support, which is what the whole movement I kind of was trying to get with the movement, you know. You've been a big inspiration to that, especially my openness about talking about mental health. I've suffered in the past with, like I've said, anxiety, and, you know, that's led to feeling really depressed and not very happy with the situation I've been in. And that's a really common thought, or has been, in my past. And I think the more you talk about that and the more you come out and enjoy your local wild spaces, the more you actually start to realise there's a lot more to the world than those thoughts. And there's also a lot of time spent on kind of pointless stuff.
Yeah. When you said you were doing this whole movement and you wanted people to get involved, I was really happy, because I've mentioned this before on a video I did ages ago, when Hayes did his Show Your Steak challenge.
Yeah, that was a big inspiration for this.
It was a really good movement because it got people talking about it. It got people talking about mental health, depression, suicide, anxiety, all of that, all of those sort of subjects that people just find a bit awkward to talk about, but they shouldn't.
Yeah, and that's really why I felt kind of able to do that. And I guess it's, you know, I owe a big thank you to Hayes as well for invigorating that kind of movement all the way back then, at kind of near the inception of our kind of meeting as well, really. But yeah, it's really important, like you said, to open discussion.
Yeah, so when I did that video, I sort of almost talked from a position of someone who had depression and was almost better.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say that when I filmed that video, that was the case.
Yeah.
And actually, I then had a sort of resurgence back into that negative state of mind.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm not ashamed of admitting that I've got antidepressants with me in my bag.
Yeah.
I am diagnosed with depression.
Yeah.
And yet, most of the time, I'm a really happy, jolly guy.
You are. Yeah. You're the most bubbliest.
But I do have anxiety, and the anxiety can lead to depression. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I'm on antidepressants. But I was saying to Liam today how when I'm outside, I don't feel the need to take them.
No, you'd had a few days off.
I haven't used them, like, I maybe had like one day's worth in like 7 days.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Because I've been outside all the time. And I'm feeling happy.
Yeah. You are getting your antidepressants.
Yeah, they're like forest bathing.
So you're almost weaning yourself off of them.
By being outside,
which is just amazing, buddy.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm not ashamed to admit that, because actually it's a chemical imbalance. And it's like, all I'm doing is giving myself the same chance as everybody else to feel normal.
Yeah.
And so, like, don't be embarrassed. If you put on something, just take it for a bit and try and get off it.
Yeah, see how it reacts with you. Some things don't even work with you, some things might. And I think having that open mind is the biggest thing about mental health, isn't it? You've got to be open. You've got to be open to suggestion.
That's it. We talked about therapy earlier, didn't we? And I said I'd had some phone calls with therapists in my time. It was a couple of years ago. I hit my sort of lowest. It was the same time you had your accident, Liam.
Yeah.
I lost my best friend since childhood in a car accident. I was stressed at work. I'd just lost my best friend. You were injured and really, like, in quite a bad state, weren't you, at that point?
Yeah, I was.
And it just seemed... And then I was in a car accident myself, and our car got totaled, leading to, like, money worries, and it just seemed to be one thing after another, and I just hit rock bottom.
Well, there's only a certain amount that a normal person can take. You know, we can all be superhuman at certain times and take on an amount, but it has its toll.
Yeah.
And every up has its down.
That's it. And I think we were talking, like when you were out of hospital, we were chatting quite a bit, weren't we, on text, and
yeah,
we were finding out how each other was, and you were obviously struggling with what had happened to you.
Yeah, because I was struggling. Wasn't even sure.
That was it. You'd gone through something really traumatic. And then you were asking me how I was, and I was like feeling like awkward about saying that, oh, I'm having a bit of a rubbish time as well.
Yeah, but
obviously I haven't fallen off a building. No,
but you know, I was worried about you. You're a really good friend, and you know, I couldn't, despite my position, it was my body that was hurting, but my mind was okay. Your mind, you know,
my body was fine, and my mind was not in a good place. Yeah. So, like, it swings and roundabouts, and I think we both looked out for each other, and as a result, we are now what we are, which is best mates.
Yeah, we are so close, and I think without that openness and honesty, I don't think we'd be able to be there. And
no.
I think that's why that discussion about, you know, mental health and being open is so important, because I don't think we'd have been able to be so close if we hadn't have broken down that boundary about being honest about that, and accepting that, you know, actually, maybe sometimes, you know, let's say if we both had expectations to, when I send Tom a message, he has to instantly have a reply there waiting for me, then it just wouldn't work.
No.
You know, it just wouldn't. And because we're open about that kind of stuff with each other, and I also can relate to Tom. And I wouldn't be able to relate to Tom without us being honest.
No. It's like if you text me and you're like, I'm having a bit of a rough day, I need to talk, I'll be like, I'm at work at the moment, but I'll tell you what, I'll give you a ring first thing when I get in.
Yeah, and that's me kind of like, hey, Tom's giving me a call. And that gives me, that's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And that can be unbeknownst to you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it's important, because sometimes you don't know the actual impact that you're having on people.
No, and I think you'd be surprised by the number of people that you actually do have an impact on without knowing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where something like Liam's Forage for Freedom movement actually comes in, because you might think, okay, I'm just sharing a photo, I'm sharing a video of me foraging plantain or wild garlic while I'm out.
Yeah, it's just a hashtag.
It's just a hashtag, what can it do? But actually what it's doing is it's breaking down the taboo, and it's showing that you are okay as someone who is happy to talk about mental health.
Yeah.
And maybe then you can be a trusted person for somebody else, or they can feel like, oh, okay, if this big YouTube guy is doing a hashtag about mental health and positive well-being, maybe it's okay for me to talk to my parents about it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's breaking down that stigma that I think is really important. And the more we share this positive thing about, okay, yeah, everyone has a rough day, everyone goes through a rough patch, maybe you'll have a bit where you're feeling anxiety where you possibly wouldn't have done before,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine. You're just having a rough patch and you just need to talk to someone about it.
Yeah, that really is, you know, Tom, you just said it like really beautifully there. That kind of embodies everything that Forage for Freedom was meant to be. And the reason you can say that is because you intrinsically understand exactly where I'm coming from, which I think is just one of the best things about our relationship as well, as and friendship. You know, we've kind of broken down that barrier of mental health, and through that gained such a good friendship. And that can happen to so many other people out there. There's a chap on Instagram called Matt Wildcamps, and he actually made a really good submission. And at the end of this episode, I'll play the audio clip.
That was brilliant.
And he was talking about how his wild camping journey started, and I'll leave it at that. But it was really, really nice. And
it was very touching, actually.
Yeah, it was. Really, really, really nice, because I can relate in some aspects, even though it's kind of situationally different. I can exactly understand where he was coming from on that message as well.
And, like, let's just take it back a little bit. Like, I don't want to be self-indulgent here, but if we take it back to when I was at uni, I'd never heard of the term bushcraft.
Yeah.
And actually at uni was my first sort of experience of real depression.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going out of my house. I wasn't leaving my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it got so bad that I couldn't answer the phone.
Yeah.
I couldn't use public transport. I tried to learn to drive, and then that put me off driving, and I still don't drive. That's the one thing that is still lingering. I still haven't conquered that yet. I couldn't do anything. I was literally just sat in my room, like
That's hard to envision seeing you now.
And now I'm going out on solo wild camps. Yeah. I'm working with a leading bushcraft school. I've helped kids do their DOV. I've taken them out on expeditions.
We're doing the
I've taught classes. We're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
We're meeting loads of really interesting people. We're interviewing internationally renowned bushcraft instructors.
Exactly, yeah.
And yet, there was a time in my life where I couldn't leave my room and I couldn't answer the phone.
No.
And it just and that actually led me to thinking, okay, I don't want to be like this.
Mm.
Because this isn't me. This is allowing it to win.
Yeah.
And so that's what then pushed me to do my first bushcraft course. Because I was like, I'd been watching a few videos on YouTube and I was like, okay, feeling really miserable, sat in my room, let's watch some interesting videos of people. And I actually started idolizing MCQ Bushcraft and Joe Robinette because I
great
wanted
channels.
To be those guys. I wanted to be able to be confident enough to go out into a woods and be self-sufficient. And I couldn't understand how they could do that back then. I was like, I cannot imagine doing that, because to me at that time I couldn't leave my room. I found that terrifying, the thought of it.
Yeah.
And
understandably,
I set myself the challenge of being that. I was like, I'm gonna do that.
And look where you are.
And
you've done it.
By setting myself that goal and working at little steps. Initially, Back Garden Bushcraft was founded because I wanted to learn the skills in a safe environment.
Yeah, your back garden.
So I started learning it in my back garden. I then went out local woods. I went to local campsites. And then the trips got bigger. I booked onto a trip to Sweden. It was actually the first time I'd ever been abroad.
That's amazing.
And I booked on with people I didn't know. I knew one guy on the course leader I knew, because he'd run a course that I'd been on. Other than that, I didn't know anyone.
That's brilliant.
And I just pushed myself incrementally to go further afield and built my confidence.
Yeah.
And developed a lifelong passion.
Yes.
And that's what I'm saying. It doesn't have to be a negative thing, mental health.
Yeah.
Because actually, if I had not suffered with depression at uni, I might not be sat here right now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because, you know, I've been on a wild journey with bushcraft. It's and the woods, in fact, because I started off my journey with bushcraft quite young. I was quite privileged to discover Ray Mears. Although I didn't know his name quite young, I saw this guy rubbing sticks together on a TV program, and for years after, I was hunting down his name, and when I finally got hold of it, I just latched on and really, you know, took bushcraft and ran with it for a few years, until my kind of, you know, I went to college, did countryside and land management, and I guess that's kind of where it all started to, I guess, go wrong. Growing up, going to college, starting having a little bit more of a social life, I started to spend a little bit less time in the woods. And then when I did get back into the woods, it was in more of a forestry industry. So I was actually relating woods to work, and that put me into a dark place with the woods. I kind of started to, you know, resent going into the woods because it brought me back to work.
Yeah.
And I kind of fell out of love, not out of love with it, but I felt out of touch with it. Mm. And for a few years then I kind of just went down a slippery path of not getting into it, and things took a bad turn, and, you know, I went down the anxiety and depression, and I started rekindling that by going out with a bunch of mates and starting to just journey into bushcraft again. And yeah, just ever since, I think it was at the end of Australia, I did a little trip out into the woods and we had a little fire under a little like kind of stone overhang, and it was just beautiful, and it just reminded me of it, and I thought, oh, I've been here all this time in Australia, and just before I'm leaving, I'm like, oh, why didn't I do more? And when I came back, I made it my kind of goal to just carry on doing it, and I have since. So similar but different. It's the woods always have brought me back to ground zero.
Yeah, they are my bit of calm, and my girlfriend knows that. She is like, she keeps me sane all the time, but she will know when I need to get to the woods.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, I think you need a woods trip, Tom. You're starting to get cabin fever.
That's a good point in a relationship to be at.
Yeah, and she'll just be like, yeah, I'm all right, you go off. And I feel a bit bad because I haven't seen her for 2 weeks except for like a couple of days, because I've just been so busy in the woods. But I know that I will make it up to her when I get back from all these trips.
Yeah, and it's nice that she understands that and respects that. And also, you know, that you two have broken that boundary down as well.
Yeah, I mean, she's so supportive. She's lovely. So
I love that.
She'll be listening to this and just be like, oh, for God's sake, cringe.
Well, talking about lovely things, I think we'll end it with the lovely message from Matt Wildcamps. And yeah, I just want to say a big thank you for your submission, mate. And if anyone else does want to submit a Forage for Freedom on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, what other social medias are there?
Whatever the kids are doing now.
Yeah, just add the hashtag.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say, like, Liam doesn't want to plug it too hard, but I will. It's a brilliant movement, and I think the more people we can get actually going out, doing a bit of foraging, finding some plants, finding some animals, some bit of tracking, maybe finding some scats, some animal droppings, and just finding stuff out in the woods, just anything that you do that takes your mind off stresses or whatever, just share it with the hashtag Forage for Freedom.
Yeah,
I mean, because it breaks that stigma down.
It does. Yeah, like Tom said, a really good point actually before we completely wind off. You said earlier it's not only letting people know that you support the movement, which is obviously appreciated, but that's not what it's really about. It's and I really liked what Tom said, it's about showing that you're open for that discussion, and that someone who's on your friends list who might not have had the courage to talk to you before and say, hey, actually I'm struggling, are you able to chat, or just to spark a conversation, they might actually, that might give them the courage to chat to you.
And likewise, we're monitoring the Woadsman social media. And like, if you want to drop us a message and just like have some non-judgmental ears text you back,
yeah,
we're both happy to do that and would welcome it. So, yeah, we didn't want it to be a negative or sad episode, and we certainly don't want sympathy. Like,
no.
Like, we're both really good. We're both happy. It's just we wanted to be honest. Like, often you'll watch our videos and you won't know the behind the scenes stuff. You won't know that actually both of us have dark days sometimes, and whilst we always will do our best to put on a brave face and be positive and be a positive voice in the community.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has bad days, and also everyone struggles with something, and for both me and Liam, we have both had our sort of history of mental health, and in my family there's been very few members of my family who have been unaffected by mental health, and so it's something that I am incredibly proud to support.
Yeah,
it was something I was very vocal about in my last position at work.
Absolutely.
And actually, like, ended up really putting sort of a flag in the ground about it.
Yeah.
And something that I will continue to do that, because to me, I believe in it.
Yeah, no, 100%, and me too. You know, it's such an important message, and the thing is, don't be scared to reach out. Like Tom said, we're both here. We monitor the channel. We monitor both of our independent accounts on Instagram, and really, it was just even my Forage for Freedom was bred out of a moment like that. I was feeling really, really down a few months ago, and I thought, do you know what? Something I've so enjoyed in the past is deer stalking. And when I go out, I'm always so obsessed when I see a deer. I'm looking at it for ages. I'm reading about them whenever I see it. My dad always saves me little newspaper clippings about deer and foraging plants, everything like that. And I just decided to book on a deer stalking certificate, the DSC1 course, which aims to train people like me who want to go out and stalk deer, and it aims to educate us if we want to put food into the food chain, which is obviously really necessary because of things like infection, diseases, yep, doing it in season, shooting the correct deer, loads of different things. And I thought, actually, I'm going to commit to that. And Paul Childerly from Childerly Sporting, very local to myself, was running a course. So I just took the dive. And even though it was a bit of a financial commitment, I've just so thoroughly enjoyed going out and learning about that. And that's really what inspired me to make that video. So when I was out tracking that little muntjac deer, I just had great fun. And I thought, while I was midway through filming it, I thought, you know what, after a few years of quite bad news in the global respect, with a lot going on, I don't want to go too much into that.
No, but it has seemed like one thing after another, hasn't it? And I think there can be such a thing as being saturated with sadness.
Yeah.
because everything you read in the paper is sad, and you feel empathy for the people that it's affecting. And like, we don't get political on here, like that's not our place, but at the same time you can't help but be a bit saddened by
it. Does rub off, doesn't it,
by what you read and hear on the news. So I think actually, yeah, doing something like this just really does bring it home to actually look after yourself as well.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, like the Show Us Your Steak movement, it had been a little while since that, and I thought it was just good to reinvigorate that kind of open discussion. And thank you, Tom, for being so supportive of it, and you know, everyone else who's been so vocal about it on Instagram and YouTube, you know, thank you.
The great thing is, it's doing what we all love, isn't it? Like, it's doing what we love to promote a good cause. Like, we all love going out and foraging. Like, we foraged pine resin today for our firelighting. We found nettles, we found, was it few flowered leeks,
yeah, Allium paradoxum.
Yeah, we found gorse flowers, which I had a little nibble on,
yeah,
didn't we?
Yeah, they were really nice.
So we did a little forage, and it was really fun. And actually, all I was thinking about while we were doing that was what we were doing. And it was identifying those plants, identifying those trees, finding deer scat and fresh tracks, and then looking for the fat wood, because we wanted to actually forage our materials for our
even
fire.
Even that prunus earlier.
Yeah.
You know, and even the pines around us, we were discussing the difference between Scots and Corsican pines.
Yeah.
Really nice days surrounded by it. And talking about foraging, again, we'll leave it with Matt Wildcamp's message from when he was out foraging. And that was actually his first trip out foraging. He's been taking a mad journey, so go check out his little Forage for Freedom video on YouTube. But here's a little clip of the audio from it. And thanks so much, guys, for listening. And definitely share your submissions all over the kind of social media platforms, or just even with us in a little private message.
Absolutely. Look after yourselves, guys, and see you in the next one.
Stay safe.
So the aim for today was to do some foraging. This mental health hashtag that I think his name's Liam at Primal Nomad, he started. And he started doing like deer tracking and all that kind of stuff. Basically for your mental health. So today I was meant to find some mushrooms. I've never done it before, so I weren't going to eat them, because I would be logged off, clean, done meat. Yesterday, me and the fam started our own little veg patch in the garden. And in the process, we've adopted an injured baby pigeon and two ducks. But this Forage for Freedom, about mental health, and it's like what the outdoors means to you kind of stuff. And anyone who follows me on Instagram, or even heard me ramble in the previous video, will know that my granddad got me into being up the woods and whatnot, because when I was little, he used to bring me up round here on walks at the weekend and spend a lot of time with him up here. And then you get to an age where you start work, you kind of forget all this stuff, don't you? And then I lost my granddad in 2014. And anyone who's close to a grandparent, like my granddad, was basically my dad. He was my father figure. So when I lost my granddad, Ed went. And then when COVID kicked off when did COVID kick off? It's been that long. In 2020, everything shut down. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go for a walk up woods. And it literally started as just a walk every Saturday, like I used to do with my granddad. And it was my getaway from being cooped up in the house. And you know, it just reminded me of being my granddad, being with my granddad, because he planted so many trees up here because he was a forester. And the smells and sounds all reminds me of weekends with my granddad. So then that turned into wild camping. So now wild camping is like my monthly holiday to get out of the house. And then wild camping at the bushcraft, which I started the last couple of months. Kai showed me a bit, who I did the community camp with. Like, he made a bloody bacon rack, and I think he cut off a bit of birch, drilled some holes in it, and I think he got some ollie twigs that were still green, put them in the holes, and we had a bacon rack. He made a tripod, that's really sick, with a drop down grill. You could lift it, lower it with a chain, banging night. And then, yeah, so him and Adam opened my eyes into, dropped a few knowledge bombs on me, I'll say. Dropped a few knowledge bombs. And it was a banging night. Adam got me absolutely smashed on his Darth Vader nutsack drink. Woke up with a banging headache. And he thought I was going to die. But it was really funny. Like-minded people, no egos, nothing but respect. Having a good time. So we're trying to get one set up for me. But basically that's what the outdoors means for me. Just get away, and it's reconnecting with my granddad that I lost. That's it. That's it. That's it, mate. That's all I can tell you. It's romantic enough, I suppose.